It's the 6th of December, people, and it's the second in our December reflection series with me, Stuart the Wild Man Mabbott. Myself and William, the co-host of the People's Countryside Environmental Debate podcast, are taking the pressure off ourselves this December by doing this series. And this series is about revisiting past episodes that we feel we and you should revisit. Our usual release schedule is 10 a.m. UK time on Sundays and Tuesdays. William will be doing December reflections on Sundays throughout December, and I will be doing them on Tuesdays throughout December. My first reflection is an episode that was released originally in August 2020. It was recorded between the first and second COVID lockdowns here in the UK, and I was one of the people shielding because I was considered vulnerable. And I was maybe a little bit fractious, and but maybe a little more willing to explore some of the harder and harsher truths of life. And this episode is about the warlike rhetoric that is used within the climate movement. And is that a wise rhetoric? Listening back, I don't agree with all the points I said, but largely I still do. But I think it's well worth another listen. So here's the episode. Welcome to another over-the-phone episode of the People's Countryside Environmental Debate podcast with me, Stuart the Wild Man Mabbott, and my co-host...
William Mankelow, as always, Stuart.
And we cover lots of different issues. Some, when you're listening, they might resonate with you. And others, they may not. They may mean nothing. And some things resonate later. We found that ourselves, haven't we, William?
Yes, and of course we've been listening back to a lot of recent, past episodes, almost as classic episodes. And, you know, really challenging our own assumptions when we've been having conversations in the past about particular subjects. We know we're really facing those questions again and seeing if we really agree with ourselves. It's almost, you know, challenging those assumptions, right?
Yeah, and we're back on the phone again just for... bit of variety. I'm bored of seeing you. We're out of lockdown, sort of out of lockdown.
Yeah, we can only spend a certain amount of time together, can't we, Stuart? So you know, we try to keep our... we've always, you know, before socially distancing, we're probably trying to socially distance ourselves anyway, weren't we?
Pretty much. Anyway, I said at the top of this, some bits might resonate with you, the listeners, but we're all on different parts of the journey. So rest in the knowledge is my view that we're all in this situation together. And the podcast is like a safe space to discuss and consider the big environmental issues in our own time with a supportive ear. I think we're quite supportive of listeners, don't you, William?
We always leave room for you, the listener, to sort of form your own opinions and just listen to the conversation unfold. I mean, it says in our intro, doesn't it? Just listen to the conversation unfold and see if that changes your own opinion, or if it forms new opinions, and maybe new information is coming to you and you maybe not aware of it previously.
I was listening to a podcast last night, William, that was saying that we should allow everybody space to change their mind, and it's not about being right and wrong. And I thought, well, we've been talking about that ourselves, and I can't remember what the podcast was.
Well, I
was listening to last night, but I think it's nice that other people are realizing that.
Well, I think that's the way you have to do it anyway. You can't really coerce somebody into changing their mind. They have to change their own mind. You know, we did talk about free will in a previous episode, didn't we? There are coercions from different places, different parts of your life, but you have to make that choice yourself.
On with the subject of today's podcast. The question we've been set by a listener is by Charlotte in Jersey, which is in the Channel Islands between England and France. And her question is, we use a lot of warlike and combative narratives in the climate movement. Is that wise? Now, I've been thinking about this, and it does frustrate me, especially in the world of cancer patients. It's very warlike, like the so-and-so's battling and so-and-so's fighting. We do use these combative narratives, but is it wise, William?
I would say, from my own personal point of view, no, not really. I think it gets those that like that sort of warlike and tribal, because it becomes like almost like a tribal thing, doesn't it? That you kind of, you know, that you align yourself with your tribe, or that's what you always try and do. So you But you only align yourself with a certain amount of people that like that sort of talking or like that sort of that sort of language, when it actually needs to be a lot more inclusive. That, you know, that if you go along the line of the activist line, that doesn't include everybody in that conversation, and a lot of people are put off by it or even actually angered by it, right?
But is it a subconscious thing? You say we're put off and we use it to engage, but when you actually look at an awful lot of material in the newspapers or online, I'm not even sure we're aware that we're using warlike language. So,
well, is it a case of stepping back then? You know, because I don't consume a lot of news myself. I'm very careful with the news I select to listen to, especially. Mm. And you can start to pick apart the language that you're using and just get to the facts. That's one way you can look at it. But
go on.
I was going to say that using this sort of warlike rhetoric in something like in media, especially, is a way of getting somebody to actually to pay attention, to pick up the newspaper
I do sometimes think it's habit, though, and we're not even aware of what we're writing because.
Yeah.
I read through some random text the other day, and there was the word fight, battle, enemy, attack, trenches, entrenched, strategy. You know, I just think we need to expand our vocabulary. Not is it good or is it wise? I just think we need to say something else and not the same old stuff.
Or could it also be that we are in a situation still, or in a time when we really are? We know a lot about, when you say the words entrenched and battling and that type of thing. It can harken back to the two world wars in the last century, and we're still actually, obviously, they still resonate in our day to day lives without us maybe even realizing it. You know that we've just recently celebrated the 75th anniversary of VE Day, for example. So it's not a long time ago. So this sort of language is maybe still there, especially prevalent in Western societies, because it's the two world wars were such a big historical event, and they're still resonating now. And maybe that's the reason why we still use them, and the reason why they still stick, right?
But I think we need to actually consciously get past the attacking language and start actually talking to the other point of view and finding a common ground, because we said in a previous episode, again, the common ground is where the truth is.
Yeah, the common ground is you're bringing a lot of points of view together, and that's really where you do find the common ground. Of course, you're not going to agree with absolutely everything that everybody else in the room says, but there are common grounds, and I think that's where you're talking more about a democratic style language, aren't you? Mm. Really?
Yeah, and also a language that actually is designed to progress things and not be right and wrong. You're the enemy, I'm here, you know. But I was talking to somebody on the phone the other day, sort of about this subject that Charlotte brought up, and they're a very heavily disabled person who has appeared in the Paralympics, and I said about, you know, that about this warlike language. And she was saying, well, yeah, but even the word inspiration gets on her tits a bit, because she said, I'm nobody's inspiration. I'm just getting on with my own set of challenges, trying to win my own race. So she was actually saying it's great if she inspires somebody, but she doesn't want to be anybody's inspiration. She just wants to be acknowledged for just getting on. And she actually said to me, which resonated in my mind, that everybody's disabled to a point. And when you actually look at that, we're all disabled in some way. Mm. It just, you know, it's just that just means we all have our own set of disabling challenges.
Yes,
I thought that was interesting.
Some are just more visible than somebody's in a wheelchair. You can quite obviously see that that's their disability, right? But somebody might just have a block in their mind that they're not able to push through. That's a disability in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was going to go back. Sorry, go on.
I was just saying, exactly.
Oh, you normally go off on a tangent, right? I was going to say that behave. You know, we're talking about this whole competitive and warlike rhetoric. Mm. Actually, also, if you continuously use this language, of course, maybe the reason why we become so used to it is because you hear it all the time and it becomes less impactful. Mm. So maybe we should only use this sort of language when it is desperate. And I'm not sure that with the climate crisis we have at the moment, that is, you know, when you hear the likes of Greta Thunberg and also Chris Packham or anybody who is like the big voice for this, they are using it. So this is, we are at war almost. This is, we do need to combat this. But that it might be that you continually using that language, you just get so passé with it, don't you?
Yeah, I think language is a very powerful thing, especially if we are conscious of what we are saying. And I think we need to actually consciously look at what language we are using, how and why we are using it. Because it wasn't until this question was raised, I actually started to really look around me. And even some street signage is combative, you know, and it's a habit. I give you an idea of how language can be a habit. It seems fashionable when I'm listening, walking down the street, overhearing conversations. There are two short statements I hear. And in probably 5 years' time, there'll be another set of short statements that are in fashion at the moment.
Yes.
And I don't actually say these because I don't want to be in fashion. I very often hear somebody say, to be fair, you know, you're not being fair. You're just actually saying that to make yourself look conciliatory and then get your opinion across. I keep hearing, to be fair, he said this, you know. And the other one is, really? Really? You know, that's almost like a statement, standalone sentence in one word. Really? You know, and words come in fashions. And I'm suggesting, I don't know about you, but I'm suggesting let's actually start a new fashion. Start everybody thinking about, let's actually not talk like Joe Bloggs, who's in the queue next to us. Let's actually speak our own language.
Yeah, yeah, and come up with speak in your own language, if that makes sense. Yeah. You don't have to. Do you think it's the idea? It's the idea of fitting in, I suppose, or it's the idea of maybe also aping what somebody else has said, right?
Like you said, to be fair, that's probably what's going on.
Damn. See, you
really?
You beat me to it. I was so close to be fair, you know.
I know. I think we need to engage our brains. So
really?
Charlotte.
Really?
Yeah. So Charlotte from Jersey, you've opened a can of worms there.
Every listener question does, but thanks very much, Charlotte. Yeah.
So I don't know whether it's a good or bad thing for the climate movement to be reliant on combative words, but I think the climate movement needs to lead the way in using more considered language.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like going back to the whole thing of like you speak, if you get a community together and get a more of a consensus between a whole group rather than it being this whole competitive thing. I think in the long term, I don't think it works.
Mm.
That's my opinion though.
Right. Okay, we got a word, a letter to get on with.
Yeah, what is the letter then? What's this all about, Stuart, if nobody's heard about this before?
Well, the letter is T.
Yep.
And periodically through these podcasts, especially during the lockdown, COVID lockdown, William was picking a letter to focus your mind relating to photography, and I was picking the same letter with a different word that focus your mind on nature. And yep. Today's letter is T.
We've got to tea, so, yes. And this idea originally came from the workshops that we've done together in the past. When we could meet people face to face, we'd do a whole workshop on A to Z, wouldn't we? That's the idea.
Okay. So do you want to go first on tea?
My letter for tea is for photographic, net by nature, and I've gone for the word telescopic or telescope. But telescopic is probably the better word. And I picked this word because, you know, amongst the photographers that I've spoken to and, you know, people that have been talking about maybe changing their camera or maybe wanting to get a new lens, it's like the question always crops up is how big is your zoom? What zoom lens should I buy and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's great to have a good zoom lens, especially if you want to do some nature photography. You can't get as close to it as you want to. But I would always say that zoom lenses are all great, all very well and good. But I think there's a great quote by an American photographer called Ernst Haas. I don't know his photography very well, but I know his quote very well. He did a lot of like 1950s photography in America. And his quote was, the best zoom lens is your legs. So don't get too bogged down in the lens you've got on your camera or whatever camera you've got or what equipment you've got. You know, really get your really get your creative mind thinking about how you can move yourself rather than you using the camera that you've got to move, you know, to actually get what you want in shot. So yeah, telescopic, and yeah, the best zoom lens is your legs. So what word is yours in left for the letter T, Stuart?
Okay, mine is for the letter T in nature is try. Now, it can be demoralising having our lives impacted on with COVID-19, but just keep trying to get through by going out in walks in nature and try and find one thing in nature around you that you've never noticed before. So try and find something new. And with that brings us to the end of another episode of the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast, William.
What's the email address?
Backwards.
It's the ongoing joke, right?
Yeah, I know. People are going to switch off. Anyway, the email address, if you've got a question, is thepeoplescountryside@gmail.com. You know how to contact us on all the other platforms.
We're all over social media, aren't we?
Yeah, we're all over. So, do you want to sign out of this one?
Yes, thanks very much for listening. And once again, thanks to Charlotte for her question today. We hope we answered your question as satisfactorily as possible.
And we're going to be doing another listener question in a few days.